right, Sam Rudjofsky here, Sam Nation Talk Radio 790 KABC, live from an undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain, and it's Boxing Day. That's right, happy Boxing Day. I don't know if you know why they call it Boxing Day. It's a million-dollar question. It has nothing to do with boxing. It comes from the genesis of the word comes from boxes. These were Christmas boxes. So if you watch like Downton Abbey, you know, or some of these old-timey British shows, you realize that you know, in that era, there were a lot of servants that didn't get to celebrate Christmas. They didn't, because they had to serve the homes and the people that they worked for during Christmas Day. And so the next day after Christmas was when they were able to celebrate Christmas with their families. And they would head home to celebrate that holiday and leave with a box of presents and food and sometimes even money from their employers. And so that's where the term comes from, Boxing Day. And I don't know if you went to the mall. I made a terrible mistake today. Here in Orange County, we've got a few malls, but the big one, of course, being South Coast Plaza. And I made a terrible mistake of going there today. I have never seen so many people in one place. It was like an anthill. And that's the thing. So this is one of the, in the world, not here, but in globally, it is the number one retail day in the year. Because Black Friday is a thing we do here. It's a U.S. thing. But you go to Europe, you go to Great Britain, Boxing Day is the number one retail day of the year. And here, it's our number two retail day. Did you know that? So this is the day when everybody brings their crap back to the mall, you know, wrong color, wrong size, or I just don't want it. And or people looking for deals. I guess there are deals to be had. I had to run a quick errand, and I regretted it immediately on entering the parking lot. So that's it. Boxing Day. Interesting fact. So I've got to get right into this because I don't want to waste any time on this Obama thing. The best of the bestest Christmas presents I have ever gotten was this wonderful bit it's classic Obama. Classic Obama. He's on a podcast with David Axelrod, who's a political operative, someone who worked very closely with him through his first campaign, then worked in the White House, then left some years ago to start a political consulting business. And apparently now he's got this podcast. And so he interviews Obama. You've heard about this already, but I'm going to give you my take on it because this just is too good. So Axelrod basically is asking his former boss, right, his former guy he worked for and helped put into the Senate and put in the White House. He sits him down. He's asking him about the Trump phenomena, about the election. And of course, true to form, Obama goes back and makes it about him, about Obama. How if he was able to articulate his vision, the Obama vision, the hope and change vision, that everything would have turned out differently, put in a different way. If Obama were running for a third term, he would have won head-to-head with Trump. Here's what he says.
I am confident in this vision because I'm confident that if I had run again and articulated it, I think I could have mobilized a majority of the American people to rally behind it. I know that in conversations that I've had with people around the country, even some people who disagreed with me, they would say the vision, the direction that you point towards is the right one.
Now, you know, this is interesting because it comes on the heels of a number of reports citing that Obama is staying in Washington, D.C. Have you been following this? He's rented a very luxurious home in a Tony part of Washington, D.C. And this house belongs to none other than Joe Lockhart. You remember who this guy was? He was the Clinton's press secretary. Clinton's press secretary. And I've been asking around trying to figure out what he's done since then. He might have been a lobbyist. He has some gig now with the NFL, but that just barely started. And before that, he kind of like meandered through some very minor stuff, it seems. Now, press secretaries make, $170 a year, okay? This home that he owns in Washington is almost $5.5 million. So I'm going to just put in simple terms, there's no way that Joe Lockhart could have ever afforded a house on his, White House salary. So he must have had something very lucrative going on in the years since he left the White House. Of course, he knows the Clintons. So guaranteed, that he had a little side income stream, perhaps. Well, maybe he was giving speeches. That's true. Or perhaps he's an IT specialist known for working on email servers. I don't know. Whatever it is. The best part. I've got to tell you this. The best part about it is the pictures of the house. Beautiful. Totally my taste. But in one of the rooms, it looks like a bonus room because there's some pictures of kids' toys out. So it looks like kind of like I don't know. There's a TV, a couch, and some kids' toys. There also is on the wall what appears to be a giant portrait of Joe Lockhart. take it where you will. I mean, so anyway, Obama's moving into that house. He rented that house. There's no disclosure on how much money he's spending for it, but he's staying in Washington, which is an unusual and atypical move. I'm not sure if it's precedented, but certainly not in recent memory. Clinton left for New York. Bush, went back to Texas, and it's almost like he disappeared off the face of the earth. And Obama signaled for some time that he's going to fade into the sunset and everything. But that was before Trump won the race. So now he's talking about this third run. And it's on his mind. He's got to be looking at the race and he's looking at how it all turned out. And he's got to be thinking to himself, how did she screw this up? But on the other hand, there's an element of, this is important, there's an element of him basically, he's forgetting that you can only run on hope and change for so long. That when he had a message, and he talks about this, right? This is what he's saying. He's saying, I had a message. If I could articulate it, I would have mobilized American people. Yeah, but he did that. He got away. He did it once and then got away with it a second time, because that's the real story. The real story isn't how is it possible that Obama won in 2008. That's a no-brainer. The real story with Obama, what makes him a truly talented politician, is that he won in 2012 when things weren't going well. None of his promises that he promised his constituency, closing Guantanamo, ending the wars, yada, yada, that kind of thing. He didn't fulfill any of those promises. Protecting civil liberties. Yeah, that didn't happen. And at the same time, he'd done so much in that time to alienate any kind of constituency that a more talented and more effective leader could have developed on the right from his opposition. So he didn't do any of that. And still he won. And he won because he's a charming guy. But there's only so long that you can run. There is only so long that you can run on change when you are in charge of the mothership. And so he's been at the controls for 8 years. And this is why Trump is out there tweeting. He's saying, no way. Can't happen. No chance, no how. And the reason is an interesting consideration. What would happen if Obama had run? And the answer is I don't know if he could have won. And essentially it would require, because this is the thing, that Hillary didn't win even though she was not a qualified candidate, but was still running on Obama's legacy. She didn't go out of her way to trash him. I mean, she laid a criticism down here and there, but she ran for Obama's third term. And it isn't all just a repudiation of Hillary Clinton, the person. There's got to be some policy level implications, right? Because the people that he reached out to, the white coal miners that he got in 2008 because they were forgotten in the Bush economy. They were forgotten in the era of big bank bailouts, in all the money that Wall Street was getting. None of it was trickling down to Allentown. But the long story of it, the long in the end, that's he appealed to those voters. And so much for America being racist, right? He picked up all those same people that are being accused, right? All those white, lower, blue collar workers that are all being accused of being vile racists for supporting Trump. Those were counties that, here's the secret, those were counties that all voted for Obama. And they didn't vote for Obama because they were racist. They voted for Obama for the same reason that they're voting for Trump. That they needed somebody, they wanted change. They wanted a Washington that was different. And that Obama never delivered. Didn't do it, didn't happen, no way, no how. And it's, of course, just like, when something doesn't work out at work for you, you're working on a project and it's taken, and imagine you're working on something for 8 years and you don't succeed. It doesn't work out the way you wanted it to. That's a tough thing to see and a tough thing to grasp and accept that failure, especially when you're in it. And I promise you this, no bigger failure for Obama than Trump getting elected president. That in and of itself was a total repudiation of his presidency, of his, what does he write here? What does he say? His vision, his direction. People didn't like it. And it just came down to no delivery on hope and change. It just ended up being a cute slogan that meant nothing. And I remember talking to people about this. I mean, let's going back to 2007 when Obama first announced and was running. I said, this guy is an empty, balloon of hot air. There's nothing there. There's no substance. There's no proof that he's ever succeeded at anything. And you need some of that in order, you can have all the vision you want. Same with Trump. This will be an interesting thing to observe. Because my theory with Trump is, although he's a political neophyte, he still has real world experience in an organization, right? His business, navigating, contractors, but if you're building buildings, you got to go down to, you got to get stuff from the government, local government, from the building, commissioner and all those hobos. You got to get them to do what you need. And so you've got to know how to win people over and how to give and take. I talk about this all the time. And I think that will translate into some really good political instinct. And I think, if anything, he's exhibited that in the primaries and in this successful outcome of the general election. But by Obama saying, "Yeah, if I'd ran a third time, I could have beat him," is another example. And we're accumulating a whole bunch of these examples, aren't we? Of the Democrats just being lost and not getting it. They don't understand why they failed. They have no idea why they lost to, in their minds, a complete buffoon. And yet we know. You know because you listen to the program. You're in touch. You get it. That Trump won on some substance. And I think he has a killer instinct. He's got a great killer instinct to know when to make certain moves. Well, and the Obama, it's not just that one thing that he says. There's another. He actually took a little time to delve into Hillary Clinton. And he's talking about, you know, they still are stuck on how unfair the whole process was. This is the Lockhart. The Axelrod podcast. Now, Obama sat down with Axelrod, and it was released. It was released early this morning, and so in it, you know, he's saying, yeah, I could have won, you know, a third term. If I was running, Obama's saying this. If I was running against Trump, I could win a third term. But here, wait, I got to play this clip. Do we have the one about Hillary? Well, play this one about Hillary. Let's do it right now.
Look, you know, I think that Hillary Clinton performed wonderfully under really tough circumstances. I've said this publicly. I'll repeat it. I think there was a double standard with her.
What?
For whatever reason, there's been a longstanding difficulty in her relationship with the press that meant her flaws were wildly amplified.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, let's take this apart now. And sorry, pardon me for my guffaws. I mean, I can't even... Is this even real? For whatever reason. I don't even know where to begin. First of all, Hillary Clinton didn't perform wonderfully. She had a hard time standing erect. So we have that problem. We also have someone who was so fundamentally morally compromised with the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, the hundreds of millions of dollars that flowed into those organizations from hostile regimes. Yes, hostile regimes, you know, these kingdoms and principalities in the Middle East, to her email server. And the whole thing was so ham-fisted. Let's just for a second say, and this is important because you can't say she performed wonderfully. All she had to do with that email thing was to come out and said, mea culpa, Father, I have sinned. I did it. I did it for political expediency. I'm so sorry. I did it. I've learned my lesson, and I'm really embarrassed about this. And you know, shoot, I mean, there's people feeling sorry for O.J. Simpson, you know, lately. The America has an ability to forgive people. We really do. We are a nation of second acts. And so she would have gotten by, but that's not performing wonderfully. Here's what's not performing wonderfully. Let me give you an example. The email. So instead of doing what I described, Hillary goes in and says, No. I did everything right. Do not doubt me. And she expected the sycophantic media to carry her water, which they did. Yeah, the media just did everything for her, but it wasn't enough because it didn't pass the smell test. And we don't live in a world anymore where we have ABC, NBC, CBS to control the message. No. And Obama talks about this, of course. Filters, he called them. Filters, meaning something that gets between, you know, you and the source, right? What are these filters? Well, he didn't mention Sam Nation, although I'm sure I would be a filter, considered a filter. Fox News, you know, I blame Fox News for this. Fox News hated Trump. I don't even get it. Do you know how out of touch that is? I'm pretty sure that the general consensus in the hallways at Fox News mirrored, at least in effective substance, what the general consensus was in the hallways at CNN. I really do believe that. They're cut from the same cloth. Okay, we've talked about this. So this whole, for whatever reason, when he says there's been a longstanding difficulty in her relationship with the press that meant her flaws were wildly amplified. I mean, I almost fell out of my chair when I heard that. Because you know it's not true, don't you? You know that the media carried water for her up and down and left and right. Mostly left. But we've gone through it here ad nauseum about CNN and all the stuff that they pulled and all the hijinks. And not even, I mean, and of course, getting fed questions before in the primary, even the press was good to her, even in the primaries. And so I bring all this up to say that, to mean that Obama is lost on this. And he's going to stay in D.C. He's rented that house. And he, mark my words, he is going to act in a way, he is going to play out his fictitious third term that he's talking about here in this interview. He's thinking about it. And he's going to want to salvage his legacy. And so look to him to make a lot of noise about the Democratic Party. We got James Stanley in the news. And back after this, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
The holidays are here. The roads are busy and drivers are crazy. If involved in an accident, go to sweetjames.com.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio
790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. And enjoying a little take apart here right after Christmas of Obama's ludicrous statement where he claimed that he could have won a third term against Obama, against Trump, if he had been running in place of Hillary Rodham Clinton. And well, first, he does this podcast with Axelrod. And I don't think this is a very famous podcast. I'd never heard of it. I didn't know Axelrod was doing it. So I think, first of all, I think Obama in part is doing the podcast to help his friend. I mean, that's really what he's doing. I mean, now we're all talking about the Axelrod podcast, you know, and all of us in the media are downloading the, you know, the feed and getting it on our, and now I'm going to spend 2 weeks trying to figure out how to get the stupid podcast off my iPhone. But anyway, that's part of the reason. The other part of it is I'm telling you, when you listen to the clips, like the clips that we played last segment of Obama shell-shocked. Why is it shell-schlonged? I don't know. But whatever it is, look, he's still processing this. And I'm telling you right now that he expected to play some role in a Hillary Clinton presidency. And the reason I bring this up is, remember I mentioned the house, the Joe Lockhart house that he rented? He rented that house before the election. And one of the things that he said, and he kept repeating it, you know, he would go to the rallies. Remember toward the end of the campaign, he really rolled up his sleeves, actually literally rolled up his sleeves and would go to all those rallies, you know, and on our dime, flying Air Force One all over the country, he would go to these rallies and he'd get people pumped up and fired up for Hillary. And he kept saying, this is my legacy, you know, we gotta finish what we started. Remember that? It was his refrain. And in part, I'm telling you, one of his, since he was already planning to stay in Washington, he hasn't bought any house anywhere else, and I promise you, he's gotten used to living large. How many times has he gone back to Chicago to vacation? Think about this. How many times has Obama gone back to stay in the house that he lived in when he was senator and state senator? Like, I don't remember a single vacation of him going there. None. He likes big houses, fancy travel, everything. You know, $70 million, I think, is the so far the tally for all of his private vacations that he's taken. When he stays in Hawaii, he rents huge, you know, 10,000 square foot villas, mansions. So the what I'm getting at, he hasn't returned to Chicago. He's set himself up for a period of time in Washington, and I think he expected to play some role, to be the elder statesman, to be a, you know, some sort of a light burning in his movement. And now his movement, you know, it was already kind of flying low to the ground like some old dilapidated Sopwith camel, you know, brrr. And then along, you know, came the HMS Trump, you know, and, you know, with just a broadside volley of cannons went, you know, and the Sopwith is down, you know, it's down. It's out of the sky. It's not flying. It's smoking in a giant pile of rubble. And that is Obama's legacy. And he's got to be, he's walking away from it. Yes, you're right. To continue my extended metaphor, he is walking away from it, but barely. Think about this, okay? It's not, well, you know, there are only 8 presidents since FDR that left the White House after that either served 2 terms or served a term and a half and had their vice president fill in the remainder, either due to death or resignation. 8 presidents. You know that Obama ranks number 8, as in last, in his ability to retain total legislative seats, meaning Obama has lost more congressional seats, more state Senate, you know, state legislative branch seats, more governorships. I mean, it's a total bloodbath for the Democratic Party. And him hanging around Washington for the Democrats should be music to Trump's ears. If you're a Republican, this is the equivalent of a stinking corpse hanging out over at your nemesis front gate. This is terrible. And it's something the Democrats got to get him out and do something new and different. But hey, they don't listen to me, so what am I going to say? All right. Got some other stuff to talk about right after this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. Now who elected you, judge and jury? Socialism doesn't work. It doesn't. It doesn't work when you take property away from people who have proven that they know what to do with it and give it to people that aren't proven.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio.
790 KABC.
Oh, George Michael, very sad. I grew up with his music, and there it is. Christmas Day, found unresponsive, died peacefully in his sleep, and he will be remembered. Not just for the music, but certainly for, I don't know. You know, it's tough. I tell you, he obviously had his demons. You know, he was known for not just his music, but also for quite a bit of substance abuse problems, and seemed to be getting out of it. And then it just young, right? 54. So too young, too soon. All right. Did you hear about this kid? There's a kid in Taipei, Taiwan. So he apparently, he's 4 years old, and he got a hankering for a little McDonald's. He needed to get his fix, you know, go to the Golden Arches. By the way, when I went to Taipei years ago, I think I ate at McDonald's twice. I mean, some of these places, the food, they're so weird that I knew that if I went to McDonald's, I knew what I'd get. I knew what I'd get, you know. So I actually had McDonald's in this place. So this kid gets a hankering first. So what does he do? He's got one of those motorized trucks, you know, little cars, you know, like Power Wheels, you know, it's got a 9-volt battery in the back and, you know, moves at a snail's pace. And what did he do? He left his house and he drove it into traffic right in the middle of rush hour. And it's just driving it down the road. He drove almost 2 miles. Got all the way to McDonald's, and he ordered some fries. Not sure if he had any money to pay for them, but finally, police found him and turned him over to his parents. So, what if he rear-ended somebody along the way? Would that be something Sweet James could do? I don't know. Probably. You don't have to be in a real car to cause damage on the road. Like, for example, bikes do crazy stuff all the time. Bicycles, I mean, not motorcycles. You know, bicycles. And if you're operating a bicycle on the roadway, you know, it's a motor vehicle. And, you know, same rules apply to you, just as if, you know, as if you're driving a car. So just because this might sound a little odd, you never know. I would definitely, if this kid had rear-ended me, I'd definitely call Sweet James. No ifs, ands, or buts. I wouldn't wait to hear his side of the story. I would get Sweet James on this case pronto. How do you do it? Easy. 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. Or visit his website, sweetjames.com. All right. Oh, I've got to get right. I cannot forget this tweet that was sent out. And I'm not, for a change, it's not a Trump tweet. Did you hear about this guy in L.A., Hassam Ailush? He's the executive director of the Los Angeles chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations. It's better known as CAIR, C-A-I-R. And it's this group, by the way, I've talked about them before. I mean, they apparently claim to speak for American Muslims. These guys are radical to the bone. Some bad people here. I'm just going to put it to you straight. And this guy is a total dingus. Did you see what he tweeted? After the Russian airliner went down on Christmas and lost 92 lives, here's what he tweeted. I'm sad about the crashed Russian military jet. The TU, meaning the Tupolev 154, which is the model of the plane, could have carried up to 180 military personnel instead of just 92. Exclamation point. So he did that, yeah. And it ends up removing the tweet. He included the story from Fox News. I guess he likes Fox News, though, so there's that. But I want to talk about this crash because it's always too early to talk about crashes, but I still do it. I have a gut feeling on this that there might be a terrorism angle to the story, and I'll explain to you why when we come back. Because there's a number of facts here that just are leaning to that direction, even though the Russians are saying, no, it's not terrorism. And I'll also tell you why they do that. So when we come back, we'll talk about this crash and get into some detail. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
This is James Bergener, reminding you to drive safely this holiday season. If hurt, go to sweetjames.com.
I am a disco!
Yup, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. And, all right, enjoying a little Boxing Day fun. I am live, in case you're wondering. I'm here. I'm working today, so I'm really happy. I'm actually missed the office so much today. I had to go. I went to the office with only car in the parking lot, which is good. I'm glad other people took the day off seriously. But anyway, you know, I was just telling you about this guy from CARE, the LA executive director. Whose name is Hassam Ailush, and he sends out a text, saying that, hey, you know, that Russian plane that went down, it really could have seated 180. Too bad it wasn't full. Nice. Anyway, talking about that crash, I'm interested in all things aviation. I live and breathe this stuff. I'm a geek when it comes to all things airplane related. So hear me out on this. At first blush, you know, when a Russian plane goes down, I always think of these things as being a bucket of bolts, just a mess, just old, decrepit things falling apart, you know. But it's not exactly a fair characterization. Couple of things here. You know that this plane actually, 1983, so it was old, but very low miles, so to speak. Okay. Airplanes, by the way, they don't go by miles. They go by hours. And this plane, I read it only had 7,000 hours. Yeah, producer Robbie I got him to raise his eyebrows. That doesn't happen very often. Now, he knows why, because, you know, military guy, they get the stuff. But, you know, the typical airplane that is in business for the airlines gets about 3,500 miles a year, 3,500 hours, excuse me. So that's quite a bit. There was one crash. Remember that German Wings plane? I was able to look this up. It was the guy that intentionally dropped the plane into the Alps. That plane was about, what, it was about 24 years old, and it had 58,000 hours. So this plane's, you know, this plane's over 30 years old, and it's only got 7,000 hours. So it's actually got very, very low miles. The other thing, it just had a huge overhaul. It had a big, I think they call it an A-check on this type of airplane. This plane is about the equivalent of a 727, which you don't see very often. It's a three-engine airplane, which means, again, it can have one engine go down, maybe even two, and still maintain its rate of climb. It's a very safe airplane. So it's interesting that no distress call went out. That's right. So typically when you have a mechanical problem, like that plane in Brazil that crashed then in Colombia, you know, they call in. They say, you know, we got a problem. You know, we got this and that. We're declaring an emergency. We need a runway. And, you know, the Hudson, you know, the crash is another example. You know, I mean, it's, you know, they had time to radio. Even though they can't say much because they're busy flying the airplane, they can still radio something out. They radio a distress call. Here, nothing. Okay? And add to this one more bit of detail. And tell me what you think of this. Do you know who was on board? See, this is getting glossed over in the American press because nobody knows this, but the Alexandrov Ensemble that was on the plane, this is, they're also known as the Red Army Choir. This is as Russian, this is as Russian as the Bolshoi Ballet. Culturally, this group is huge. I even found out that they performed one year at the MTV Music Video Music Awards. They played Sweet Home Alabama. Okay, so these guys get out. And they are a symbol of Russian imperialism. They are a symbol of the Russian military. They're a symbol of Russian culture. They're famous. They're on their way to Syria to perform for the troops for the holidays and the new year. I can't think of a better target, honestly. I can't. So no one should be in this conversation. You know, when you hear in the media and the press how they're discounting this as a, oh, no, the Russians will always say it's not terrorism. It's not terrorism because they don't want to go there. They don't want to. The Russians would prefer that they not be victims of terrorism. It's bad for, it's a bad optical problem. You know how you remember this in school. You didn't want to get beat up by the bully. And if the bully beat you up, well, which would you prefer? To have the bully beat you up publicly in front of everybody or to beat you up quietly behind the school where no one can see? And if it happens behind the school, are you going to tell anybody? Maybe not. So the Russians had their way. They're very smart about this. If they had their way, they would rather, even if it was terrorism, to not publicly declare so and to have it be. And that's how it was with that Egypt crash where it was a passenger airliner that was taken out by a bomb. And the Russians denied it was terrorism for months when finally irrefutable evidence came out and there were other observers that came along and said, yeah, that was a bomb. So look very closely. You're going to see the story develop. There's, you know, typically when a plane does not emit a radio signal, does not give a distress call, typically that means kaboom, all in 1 second, done and over. And, you know, it was also good weather that day. Everything, all indicators were that this was just, everything was just hunky dory. And there's no reason for this to happen. Great pilot, low hours airplane, freshly refurbished. But it did come. It did originate in an airport that wasn't known for its security. So I think something might be up. We'll see. All right. We are back tomorrow and James Stanley up with the news next. See you then. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.